Invest with confidence.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up today, we'll look at that new NRA ad that some people think is perhaps the most hostile ad that the NRA has put out. And we'll also talk about the prospects for the outbreak of another war in the Middle East. We're going to hear from a former official of the State Department who will talk about that in a moment. Also, the issue of guns. The legislature in Tallahassee is moving forward with some gun legislation. We'll talk about that later on. We'll open up the phone lines and take your phone calls. First, one listener comment about yesterday's program. Yesterday on Florida This Week, much of that program was devoted to guns. Here's what one listener had to say following yesterday's program.
Even in St. Pete, I was just listening to the show Florida This Week, your playback of it. And I was listening to Chris Ingram's comment. And if I would have been on the board that night in this discussion, I would have said, really, Chris? Okay, let's dissect what he said. Well, let's not have a knee-jerk reaction, and banning guns isn't going to do anything, isn't going to change anything, and it's not even going to see the light of day, and yada, 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 yada. This is the same garbage that we hear from Fox News. It's the same talking point. So you know what I would have said to Chris? Well, it's kind of interesting, Chris. That's just simply wrong, because many countries in the world that have banned guns do not have the number of homicides and suicides and mass shootings that the United States does. And outside of servile insurrection, revolutions, the war in Syria, the rest of the world combined has less homicides and suicides in it. These people know it. Chris Ingram knows it. The question is, I would ask him, I'd say, Mr. Ingram, if your daughter or your son was murdered in that high school a couple of weeks ago, if they got their brains blown out and you had to go make funeral arrangements and you had to go to the funeral home and identify the bodies, would you still be saying the same statement that you're saying on this TV show tonight?
Well, there's a listener comment that came in after yesterday's program. And as you listen to today's program, if you want to comment about anything you hear, you can always email us at the studio address, which is dj@wmnf.org. We're going to talk about the possible outbreak of yet another war in the Middle East. We'll find out why a former State Department official thinks that that could happen. And we're also going to listen to that new NRA ad that is causing so much controversy. We'll hear from Tallahassee, too. A lot of sound from Tallahassee. The Florida Senate yesterday, in a narrow 20-18 vote, approved legislation aimed at making schools safer and keeping guns away from mentally ill people. In addition to widely supported measures like expanding the number of law enforcement officers at schools and more funding for school hardening, the vote was close due to opposition from both gun rights supporters and gun control advocates. The measure would raise the age to 21 for the purchase of rifles and other long guns, create a 3-day waiting period on purchases of rifles, and create what's being called a school marshal program that would allow specially trained school employees who are deputized by local law enforcement authorities to carry guns in schools. The bill was amended Monday to say teachers who work solely in the classroom cannot take part in the armed marshal program. State Senator Bill Gavano, a Republican from Sarasota, is the sponsor of the legislation. Here's part of what he had to say yesterday.
When I see bipartisan opposition as opposed to bipartisan support, then I know we're hitting nerves. We're going into areas that may not be our comfort zone.
Fellow Republican Tom Lee of Brandon voted against the gun measure, saying the legislation had become too political and does not actually accomplish much.
I don't know if they're going to continue to work on this over in the House. I can't imagine them wanting to bounce this back, have to go through this all over again. So I suspect with an 18-20 vote, they're probably going to take this bill in the House. And God help us if they send it back.
Now, the Senate 7-member Black Caucus opposed the gun bill. Caucus member Perry Thurston, a Democrat from Fort Lauderdale, said he wished the legislature would have given the student survivors what they wanted.
They can't think of a possible reason why the legislature won't do something about assault weapons. They don't want their teachers having guns. They said that explicitly. We're going to stand with them.
Now, the House is expected to take up the gun measure tomorrow in order to pass and be sent to Governor Rick Scott for final approval. The legislation needs to be identical and to pass both chambers by this Friday, which is the final day of the 2018 legislative session. Meantime, university students and their allies will host a die-in at the Florida Capitol today to honor the 17 students killed at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School and to protest the Florida Senate's decision to pass SB 7026 yesterday with the inclusion of a guardian plan. That's a $67 million budget provision that funds guns in K-12 classrooms and the arming of some K-12 staff, administrators, and some teachers. Among the people taking part in the die-in today, at the Florida Capitol, FSU and FAMU students, the FSU Black Student Union, the FSU Students for Justice in Palestine, the FSU NAACP, the Amnesty International chapter at FSU, and the Florida National Organization for Women, Dream Defenders, and the Florida Student Power Network. That die-in takes place in Tallahassee at 12:30 this afternoon. Meantime, the Florida Senate yesterday passed House Bill 7055, which is a massive education bill that's a chief priority for the conservative House of Representatives. It includes a hotly debated provision that would threaten the existence of teachers' unions here in the state of Florida. The proposal would decertify unions if fewer than half of members pay dues. Critics on both sides of the aisle argued it shows lawmakers don't care about working class people. One of those is Republican Senator Tom Lee from Brandon.
This legislature does a marvelous job representing the privileged, the deep pockets of the major donors and the lobby corps whose clients fund us. We do a lousy job, in my personal opinion, representing working class Floridians, and we should be ashamed of ourselves.
Tom Lee of Brandon, a state senator and a Republican. Well, we can talk about this. We can talk about the teacher bill. We can talk about guns. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. And you can send your email comment into the studio here at dj@wmnf.org. Well, late last week, last Friday, Lawrence Wilkerson, who was just on the show 2 weeks ago, a former colonel in the U.S. Army and former chief of staff to Secretary of State Colin Powell, warned that there may be a war brewing with Iran. He said that he fears that Israel may look for a reason to start a war with Iran. He made a statement at a conference last Friday, and let's listen to the statement he read. And here's Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson. What do you think about this? Our phone number, 813-239-9663.
Talk about, so I'm going to shorten it. He is going to talk about, is the U.S. ramping up its military presence in Syria and preparing to attack Iran for Israel? And his last position in the government was as Secretary of State Colin Powell's chief of staff from 2002 to 2005. And before serving, I'm really shortening it. Before serving at the State Department, Wilkerson served 31 years in the U.S. Army, and he retired from active service in 1997 as a colonel and has taught national security affairs in the honors program at George Washington University. And you're currently a distinguished visiting professor of government and public policy at the College of William and Mary in Williamsburg, and you're working on a book about the first George Bush administration. Welcome.
Thank you. And thank you all for being here. I'm the last speaker. I get that distinction. If this were a military audience, I'd ask you to stand up and do 5 minutes of calisthenics just to make sure you don't doze off. I have to identify myself with the remarks that were just made. over some 400 students, graduate and undergraduate, and 12 years on two university campuses, and 6 years with about 1,000 students at two of the nation's most prestigious war colleges, we have determined, although it would be probably difficult to prove, and that's the reason we have covert operations, that Lyndon Johnson not only knew the gory details of the Israeli attack on USS Liberty in the Eastern Mediterranean, he also knew about what was just told you. That is to say, he knew the uranium was being diverted, he knew Israel was building a bomb, and he chose not to do anything about it. That's not my subject today, although I could talk on that sort of thing forever, as I'm sure Jefferson could too. These days, I believe one gets the best insights into Israeli security policy and perhaps even into Israeli policy writ large, which you've heard a lot about today, from the Russian emigre to Israel, a former foreign minister, and now it's defense minister, Avigdor Lieberman. Whether it's his calling Arab members of the Knesset war criminals, or declaring the Jewish people should leave France, or claiming that the next military action against Hamas in Gaza will be the last, or contradicting his own military chief by denying there is a humanitarian crisis in Gaza, or stating categorically that the IDF will stop at nothing in order to win, reminding me a great deal of Dick Cheney, Lieberman is the living face of Bibi Netanyahu's Zionist policies. I sometimes think he would have rather remained in Russia so long as it was the Soviet Union and so long as he were in a significant position of power there. In addition to reminding me of Cheney, he is reminiscent of and indeed might well be a latent version of Joseph Stalin. As an aside, it is intriguing and I think well outside the usual conspiracy theory to consider whether or not Lieberman has been intimated of our own President Trump might be an NKVD, GRU, KGB, FSB, you name it, plant. That is an agent of Vladimir Putin. He has more or less forged most of the 1 million Russian emigres since 1991 into a formidable political force, forming the political party that has more than once played kingmaker in the Israeli political scene. What a strategic coup for Vladimir, the master chess player in the world today, in my estimation, while everyone else plays a really lousy game of checkers. It would be quite a coup for him. Of far more concern at the moment and readily provable, unlike what I just said, Lieberman exemplifies where Israel is headed, toward a massive confrontation with the various powers arrayed against it, a confrontation that will suck America in and perhaps terminate the experiment that is Israel and do irreparable damage to the empire that America has become. Lieberman will speak in April in New York City at the annual conference of the Jerusalem Post. The title is, quote, "The New War with Iran," unquote. It is clear that he's in the forefront of promoting this war. And nowhere does my concern about such a war focus more acutely at the moment than in Syria. As President of France, Emmanuel Macron, described it recently, quote, "The current rhetoric of the U.S., Saudi Arabia, and Israel is pushing the region toward conflict with Iran," unquote. In that triad, no state is doing that more than Israel. Listen to Netanyahu in January at the Holocaust Memorial Museum in Jerusalem. Quote, "The greatest danger that we face of hatred for the Jewish people and the Jewish state comes from Iran. It comes from the Ayatollah regime that is fanning the flames of anti-Semitism," unquote. This anti-Semitism bit, of course, as we've heard today, almost always a weapon of choice for Israeli politicians under stress, hurled in this case at the country whose Jewish population, by the way, the largest in the Middle East outside Turkey and Israel, lives in Iran in reasonable peace. And don't forget that these words are uttered by the man who is, as we've heard here today briefly, doing everything he can to expel dark-skinned African refugees, largely from Eritrea and the Sudan, from Israel. where most have come as legitimate refugees. President Trump's wall on the Mexican border is nothing compared to Bibi's actual policies. More recently, Bibi's performance at the Munich Security Conference bordered on the infantile, and yet effective when you think about the audience to whom he's speaking, as he held aloft an alleged piece on an alleged Iranian drone and asked Monsieur Zarif if he recognized it. Of course, Mr. Zarif later took his occasion at the microphone to characterize Netanyahu's performance as like that of a circus clown. Pretty good characterization, as a matter of fact. But I like the comment of Lebanon's defense minister even better. It went to the point. He said that he had an Israeli drone over his head virtually 24/7. That comment put the hypocrite that Netanyahu is in the right perspective. Of late, of course, Tel Aviv is increasingly using Iran's presence in Syria, its support for President Bashar al-Assad, and its alleged drive, and I love this one, my military comrades love it too, for a Shia corridor from Tehran to Aden as the hoary beast that must not be at any cost, including, of course, American treasure and lives, as his probable cause and existential prompt for action. That Israel has in support such disparate figures as Nikki Haley at the United Nations, Jim Mattis at the Pentagon, Rex Tillerson at State, as well as the usual suspects from outside the world of warmed over neoconservatives, is indicative of such policy. But it's not just the usual suspects from the world of neocons, about whom I know quite a bit, having experienced them in 2001 and 2 and 3. Take, for example, my South Carolinian, fellow South Carolinian, Lindsey Graham. Speaking 4 days ago after a breathless trip to Israel, a bipartisan trip, he called it. I don't know how anybody could use that term. And I caution, don't laugh, because Lindsey was serious, I think. But anything bipartisan with regard to Israel, call it unanimity. Call it absolute unanimity, anything but bipartisan. In fact, the proper words are probably overwhelming and unprecedented unanimity. In fact, the only issue that does unify the United States Congress, other than mom and apple pie. But Graham had this to say, quote, anytime you leave a meeting where the request is ammunition, 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 that's probably not good. That's Lindsey. That's Lindsey. I know Lindsey well. This was the most unnerving trip I've had in a while, he said breathlessly again. Graham went on to assert that, quote, when they tell you we won't help to deal with the blowback that might come from attacks on civilian targets where Hezbollah has integrated military capability, that was so striking. That was striking, end of quote. And then Senator Coons, who up until this time I've had some respect for, fairly sane and sober senator from Delaware, reported that, quote, the tempo in terms of potential for conflict in Syria has gone up astronomically. The technologies Iran is projecting into Syria and southern Lebanon has gone up. Iran's willingness to be provocative, to push the edges of the envelope, to challenge Israel has gone up, end of quote. Coons reported this almost as breathlessly as Lindsey. With the highest tech nation on earth in Syria, the United States of America, that is all Coons could derive from his visit. That the country that spends less than 1% of what the U.S. spends on its national security has introduced new technologies in Syria, technologies that threaten the country Israel, to whom the U.S. bounty is limitless? This is Joseph Goebbels' territory. Karl Rove is envious. The Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, as the heir to the Project for a New American Century, Bill Kristol's Iraq-bound think tank, leads that pack of wolves disguised as warmed-over neocons, lavishly funded by the likes of Paul Singer. It's even spawned the Institute for the Study of War, a fascinating Orwellian title if there ever was one. It should be the Institute for War. I've been asked, why is it that you ascribe to FDD and now the ISW such nefarious motives? I was asked this by the New York Times editorial staff when they published my op-ed on Iran a few days ago. My answer is simple, because that is precisely what FDD is attempting to do. Just as Douglas Feiss, Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, Office of Special Plans, did in 2002 and 2003 for Richard Bruce Cheney to lead us into war with Iraq. I've been there, done that. I don't need the tour. The salient question, though, why do you believe that America is headed for a struggle with Iran, needs an answer. Certainly, America's unquestioning support is required, as has been the case from George W. Bush to Barack Obama to the rapture-seeking Mike Pence and the tweeter and king Donald Trump. But it seems that recently, Lieberman and Netanyahu and their acolytes in this country, amongst which I put at the top Nikki Haley, have determined that it would be best if American troops also participated in the overthrow of the Tehran regime. From one point of view, I suppose this is understandable, the crassly opportunistic point of view, that is, that better to squander your own allies' blood and treasure than your own, but it's certainly not in the character that I'm used to with regard to the state of Israel, and certainly not with regard to the Israeli Defense Force. That force could handle anything Iran threw at it militarily is undeniable. Any military professional will tell you that. And that Israel's more than 200 nuclear warheads could decimate Iran is equally undeniable. So why this attempt to suck America into this conflict? I believe the answer is fairly clear once you push aside the cobwebs that surround it. The legitimacy of great power is what I call it, and that is precisely what Netanyahu and Lieberman desire. It's also what Riyadh desires, especially with the new boy king, Mohammed bin Salman. Now an erstwhile ally of Israel. In short, the IDF could defend Israel, but it could not attack Iran, not successfully anyway. And were it to do so, it would be damned internationally and thus isolated even more than it already is today, perhaps devastatingly so. But America, already damned by well more than half the world, polls show at least 4 billion people think we're the number one threat to their security in the world. Think about that for a minute. We've already done Iraq, Libya, and Syria. Afghanistan, we'd just be seen as continuing the trend. Besides, America has the military capacity, and here's the long pole in the tent, to project the power needed to unseat swiftly the regime in Tehran. Swiftly in terms of Saddam Hussein, for example, not swiftly in terms of taking care of 75 million people, each one of which in a very rugged and strategically deep terrain would want to kill every damned American in the country, along with probably half the rest of the Arabs in the area. So, there's only one significant hang-up that I see with this strategy that Netanyahu and Lieberman are pushing. Embroiled in his own legal problems that just might send him to jail, as such problems would likely have sent Arik Sharon to jail had he not been in really bad shape at the end of his prime ministership, they're both headed for war. Of that, I'm convinced. They will use Iran's allegedly existential to Israel presence in Syria, which is becoming even more so from a military perspective every day. Hezbollah's accumulation of some 150,000 missiles, if we believe our intelligence agencies. The need to set Lebanon's economy back yet again. That's important. Look at what they're deliberating right now with regard to the new, very, very rich gas find in the eastern Mediterranean, with Israel claiming Section 9 and Lebanon claiming Section 9. Take that, Lebanon. We're going to bomb you. Then you'll let us have it. And that will be their excuse. And we're looking at them taking on, and this is a point that all military people understand, a country that couldn't beat Iraq in 8 years of brutal, bloody war. An Iraq that we beat in 19 days. So this is the colossal threat that they're up against. And men such as H.R. McMaster are helping them. the much-heralded author of Dereliction of Duty, great title, and a man who knows about as much about Iran as I do about the 8th planet in the 95th solar system in the 50th galaxy past our own. And here's a hope I have. Let's hope that the chess master-in-chief, old Vladimir Putin, he that ruins elections from Paris to Peoria, is smart enough, once again, not to let this happen. I fear he'll not be, and we might have the stirrings of 1914, as utterly stupid as we now know those stirrings to have been. People to whom I mention such possibilities, people who are critically analytical and normally fairly sound in their thinking, respond that, well, don't you consider that sort of dreary prognosis a little bit overdrawn? My rejoinder is usually something a bit too clever, perhaps, but along these lines, don't you think a number of people said that in the summer of 1914? Ah, they respond, but have we not learned so much since then? I'll let you be the judge of that and inform you only that in my considered view, we have learned very little, and there are the ingredients right now with Turkey, Syria, Iran, Iraq, Saudi Arabia losing dramatically in Yemen right now, and the United States and Russia at the peak of all of this to get engaged. A very distinct possibility. I looked at this from the perspective of the political parameters. What is it that we're confronting today in this country? And this took me down an entirely different path as I tried to figure out just how this team of McMaster, Tillerson, Kelly et al., and Trump at the top of it will face this sort of decision-making process. And the only place I could find that remotely resembled where we are today in our past was the period 1850 to 1860. And so about 6 months ago, I started reading as voraciously as I could on that period. I'd done some reading, but I needed to really do a lot more. It is stunning, the similarities between that period and now, particularly in the political situation where one side of the country wouldn't talk to the other side of the country, and vice versa. And I was struck today by some of the comments that were made that resemble the comments that were made by my region, my state fired on Fort Sumter, after all, back in those days. And if that is the political situation in which this government will do its national security decision-making, then we are in deeper trouble than even the prospects of a region-wide and perhaps even bigger war in the Middle East. And the country that will have started it all, the relationship, unbalanced as it is, that will have made it possible, is Israel. And that's the danger we face.
Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson last Friday at a press conference at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. The event was sponsored by the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs and the Institute for Research on Middle East Policy. Wilkerson is the former chief of staff to Secretary of State Colin Powell, and in there he warned of a possible war involving Israel and Iran taking place in the near future. Wilkerson was just in Sarasota. He spoke with the group Florida Veterans for Common Sense, and he was on WMNF a couple of times. He was on this show, Radioactivity, and on Democracy Now! Within the last 2 or 3 weeks. Well, what do you think about that? Another possible war in the Middle East. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. I want to play some more sound for you that's happened in the last 24 hours. Republican strategist Mike Murphy yesterday was on MSNBC, and they were talking about that kind of bizarre media trip that a former Trump campaign staffer was making yesterday. And in the course of the discussion last night with Lawrence O'Donnell on MSNBC, Republican strategist Mike Murphy said that he had heard an interesting rumor about special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation. Let's listen into what Murphy, who is one of the top Republican strategists, had to say.
we may be. But, you know, there's no adult grown-up operation here. The president does what the president wants, and then there's a bunch of these guys running around trying to clean up after him 24-7, which is completely exhausting. But I don't think there's any strategy or anything. I think it's all Trump-driven. And I'll give you one salacious rumor on all, because it's Russia speculation night. I was walking around Beverly Hills, and God, I don't want to be pulled in by Mueller on this, because I don't know anything. But I was walking around an international businessman who I know pretty well, swore me to secrecy, said, you can say this on TV, friend of mine got pulled in by Mueller, asking about an MOU, a memorandum of understanding for a deal that Trump had with Russian financial interests during the 2016 campaign, and Mueller has the document. So that is my contribution to the cloud of speculation. I believe this guy is credible, but I have no way of knowing if it's true.
And, all right, Republican strategist Mike Murphy last night on MSNBC saying that there's a memorandum of understanding between Russia and President Trump in the hands of Robert Mueller, the special counsel. We'll see whether or not that's true. Our phone number, 813-239-9663, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. I really want to get your reaction to this, too. This soundbite, in the midst of what appears to be a national backlash against the NRA, the NRA released a new promotional video yesterday in which its spokeswoman, Dana Loesch, goes on the defensive against Hollywood phonies, athletes, journalists. She names a whole bunch of groups. We're going to hear that in just a moment, who have been criticizing the NRA following the Parkland shooting. The ad was posted on NRA TV. Let's listen to this. And what is the NRA actually advocating here? What do you think? 813-239-9663.
We've had enough of the lies, the sanctimony, the arrogance, the hatred, the pettiness, the fake news. We are done with your agenda to undermine voters' will and individual liberty in America. So to every lying member of the media, to every Hollywood phony, to the role model athletes who use their free speech to alter and undermine what our flag represents, to the politicians who would rather watch America burn than lose 1 ounce of their own personal power, to the late night hosts who think their opinions are the only opinions that matter, to the Joyanne Reeds, the Morning Joes, the Mikas, to those who stain honest reporting with partisanship, to those who bring bias and propaganda to CNN, The Washington Post, and The New York Times, your time is running out. The clock starts now.
All right, that's a new NRA ad that's up on the web, promoting an NRA TV show, attacking the New York Times, The Washington Post, saying your time is up, and also attacking a late-night TV host, Morning Joe, Joyanne Reed, Mika Brzezinski, athletes, Hollywood, and saying that all these people are trying to undermine voters' will and hurt liberty in the U.S. What do you think about that? 813-239-9663 is our phone number. And our email address is dj@wmnf.org. So we can talk about any of these topics. We can talk about what the legislature did or didn't do about guns. We could talk about possible war in the Middle East. We can talk about the NRA ad that you just heard. What do you think? 813-239-9663. We can talk about the Mueller investigation. And there's a whole lot of other news items that we could talk about. So what's on your mind? 813-239-9663. And our email address is dj@wmnf.org. So what do you want to talk about? And usually the first few calls set the tone of the show, too. So whatever of these topics you want to comment about, You may set the tone for the whole show. We also heard Senator Tom Lee saying something interesting, saying that the legislature doesn't do enough to protect the interests of working class people. And Lee is a Republican from Brandon. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. And let's go to John in Palm Harbor. Hi, John. You're on MNF. What would you like to comment about?
Hey, Rob. Listening to that ad, I think it's a lot calmer than other ones that she has on NRA TV and on YouTube. That there's one that was for Black Lives Matter and around the time in Charlotte, and there's images of it's like a war, man, that they're coming after us. And they also did an ad strictly against the New York Times stating the same thing, that, you know, you fake news, blah, 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 we're coming for you. And it's in your face, an attack, and it's scary.
Well, it does sound like they want to fight. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
sure
when I listen to late night, I mean, they're attacking late night TV hosts, and they're attacking NFL players that take a knee to protest police brutality.
Black.
African Americans, absolutely. And we did. We played one of those ads after Charlottesville. We did play one of those ads here. But, you know, those folks are not, you know, they're not asking for a fight. They're asking for justice, and they're asking for, you know, they want to get to the bottom of the possible Russian connection with the late night TV hosts want to get to the bottom of the possible Russian connection. But the NRA is escalating this, and they're acting like, okay, we're going to take you on in a fight. And you're right. It sounds like the opening argument for a civil war, doesn't it?
It does. And, you know, being on the internet and making comments that I'm a 60-year-old white guy, and I have guns, and I'm retired, and I make comments on the New York Times. And
you mean on their website?
They have a comment section.
Yeah,
on some
okay.
of the articles that they do, and they're actually pretty cool about what they'll let through. But the only time ever when I commented on the NRA that someone came back at me really angry. And it was, like, intimidating. And it was like...
Well, did you criticize the NRA in your comment?
I criticized the NRA and their thought of thinking and Dana Loesch being an angry woman. And they came back about, I don't see any anger, you know. It just denial, denial, denial. Grew up with guns. You know, guns and religion hanging on in Pennsylvania. I've hunted since I was 10 years old. And... thank God I don't live up there. You know, I don't know what I'd do if I heard an automatic rifle going off in the woods, you know, let alone in my school.
Yeah, you know, I grew up in Pennsylvania, and every year in deer hunting season, I lived on the edge of the woods, and, you know, it sounded like a war going on some days. But, John, thanks a lot. Thanks. And thanks for starting the conversation.
And... I didn't know about this woman from Florida, that this lady who was sitting during the legislation session, that she's been really the person behind the NRA, not...
Marion.
Blank out who the leader is.
Yeah, Marion Hammer.
Yes. And thanks, man. I appreciate what you do. I like to listen to the Sunday show, the perspective that they give, but you're good for this community, and I appreciate you.
All right, John, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling.
Take care, man.
All right, take care. 813-239-9663. And if you want to agree or disagree with anything you've heard here, you're welcome to call us, 813-239-9663. Bill is listening online, and he says, that soundbite from the NRA strikes me as neo-fascist. And Peter writes this. He's in Tampa. He says, Rob, the NRA is so drunk with power that they're not able to see what the American people really want. It is the NRA that is the purveyor of lies and distortions. It is the NRA that has blood on its hands. And our citizens are finally waking up to that fact, writes Peter. Let's take some more phone calls. Let's go to John in Bradenton. John, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hello, this is John Wayne Pilgrim. I'm calling from Bradenton.
Boy, you're alive. You're alive.
Yes. They faked my death like Tupac. But I wanted to tell you, Rob, I think that armed teachers is definitely the solution, because when you're drunk and you want to get sober, everyone knows you need more beer. So here's my lineup for your children's new teachers. We're going to get Rambo teaching mathematics. Steven Seagal can handle history. Charles Bronson for home economics. And yours truly, the Duke, will teach science. What do you think about that?
Duke, I think that's great. I love you in True Grit, too. You're fantastic.
And by the way, Rob, it looks more and more every day like the President of the United States might be a traitor. Whether or not we execute him, that's going to be a tricky subject. But keep up the good work, Pilgrim.
Okay, John, thanks a lot. There's the Duke signing off. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Andy in Dunedin. Andy, you're on M&F. What would you like to comment about?
Oh man, thanks, Rob. You got me following up the Duke. How am I supposed to?
I don't know how you top that.
Oh my God! Thanks for that McMaster speech. That was wonderful, and that he pointed out that Iran had such a large Jewish population was really eye-opening. I had no idea. I knew they were a peaceful society overall and didn't spend much on the military, but it just shows that Netanyahu must be willing to take out some of his Jewish people just to, to prop himself up.
Well, Netanyahu is in Washington. You wonder what he and the president are talking about this week.
Be a fly on the wall, huh?
And that Wilkerson speech, if people want that speech, I'll send you a link to it if you want to email me here in the studio at dj@wmnf.org.
Yeah, I wish we could almost cram that down everybody's throat so they'd have to watch it. But as far as the NRA speech, that woman just sounded like she was naming names, you know, almost right on the edge of inciting violence without actually coming out and doing so.
Yeah, you know, I wonder why the anger. I mean, because as I listen to, you know, all those people that she called out, the New York Times or the Washington Post or even Morning Joe, you know, they kind of shake their heads or they point out discrepancies, but they don't have the kind of anger that says that, we're going to go to the war with the NRA. Now, there are some people that think that the NRA is a lobby for criminals or a lobby for mass murderers. We've seen the billboards out there that attack the NRA, and there's no doubt that there are people who are angry at the NRA and the NRA's role in getting AR-15s in the hands of mass murderers. But, you know, by and large, the folks that she was calling out, the Hollywood types or the athletes or Morning Joe, I mean, they're pretty moderate in what they say.
Yeah, I think Wayne LaPierre's just sitting in the background with his strings and waving that big bonus check in front of her. So see how she does.
Okay, Andy.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks a lot. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Fran in Largo. Fran, you're on. What would you like to say?
Oh, thanks, Rob. I just find it very ironic with the Republicans how they're always trying to cut off women's rights to abortions or birth control or any kind of rights, and yet they kowtow to people like Marion Hammer. I mean, she has them by the ring in their noses, and, she says, jump through this hoop, and they say, how high? And then this Dana Loss. I just find it very ironic, highly ironic. They're like a bunch of mama's boys, and they're just trying to fight back with the rest of their legislation they try to do, for women, Planned Parenthood and all that. That's what I wanted to say.
Yeah, well, this idea that Marion Hammer writes legislation, and then when legislators are fearful that the legislation may step on her toes, they run it by her to get her okay, and that she has... She has not just legislators, but also staff members who clear things with her beforehand. I mean, she is quite powerful. You wonder what the basis of that power is. Is it simply the 300,000 NRA members in the state of Florida? Is it her emails? Is it her ability to get tens of millions of dollars in campaign donations sent out to candidates? I wonder what the source of that power is.
I don't know. It just makes one wonder about it, though, the state of affairs right now. Like I said, the Republicans are always pushing back on women's rights, and yet here they are just dancing to the tune of Marion Hammer with the NRA, and then they have this Dana Loss as a spokeswoman, saying all this nasty rhetoric. So I don't know. It's just ironic, though. It really is.
All right, Fran, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling in. Take care. Patrick writes this. He said, to me, that ad sounds like a recruiting ad. The odd part is it follows exactly the divisiveness that Putin wants. That's Patrick's email. And then Greg's email says, putting more guns in school will make our children less safe. Our Florida legislators are threatening our kids. We can't let this stand, he writes. And he goes on to say that the NRA is pushing the U.S. toward civil war, writes Greg. And then Chris writes this regarding the police and the NFL. Please mention this report for those who think most of these black NFL players are kneeling for no reason. And he cites a BuzzFeed.com report written, I think, by Kendall Taggart. And he goes on to say, secret New York Police Department files, hundreds of officers committed serious violations, I think, of civil liberties. There was a story that came out within the last 2 days about these secret New York Police Department files. David writes this, it's awesome to have John Wayne calling into your show. I want to hear from Charlton Heston too, Pilgrim, writes David. 813-239-9663. Let's go back to the phones, and we're going to go to Ernie, who's in Port Richie. Ernie, you're on M&F. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine.
I just want to comment. I want to quote Joe Scarborough on MSNBC. He raved on and on about in Vietnam, they started with the M16, and the M16 was just so terrible, they had to switch to the AR-15. And that was the much more devastating weapon than the M16. And he went on and on and on about that. And there is so much wrong with that statement. It's laughable. The M16 was the primary weapon in Vietnam. The AR-15 was never introduced into Vietnam. Let's grant him that maybe he meant the M14 and not the M16. Well, he was still wrong. So this is pointing out, my purpose for this is pointing out the knee-jerk, really ignorance on the part of those who want gun control, but they know nothing about firearms. And it leaves them in a position of being manipulated. And that's all I have to say.
Well, Ernie, let me ask you this. I don't know if you saw the report over the weekend in the New York Times in which the reporter asked several emergency room doctors who had field experience in wars. And one of the doctors said, you know, they've seen exit wounds from AR-15s, and the entrance wound is often very small. But the exit wound could be as big as a foot in diameter. And Joe Scarborough talks about, you know, shooting guns when he was growing up in the South. And, you know, I've shot guns and I know what an entrance wound looks like, you know, what a .22 entrance wound looks like, or maybe a 30-06. They can do a lot of damage. But I can't imagine either one of those blowing a hole a foot wide as it exits a body.
It's a very deadly weapon.
Yeah, it is. So why should we have them?
You know, personally, if we could be sane about it, I have no problem with it. It's like those against guns like to quote statistics about the last, and I'm going to reveal some information here. Probably those anti-gunners don't know. They'd like to say that, oh, before when we had the assault weapon ban, oh, there were so much fewer shootings and all this. You know what the assault weapon ban was? It was purely cosmetic. Purely cosmetic. And you can find that out. It's easy to find out. Just, you know, you couldn't have a bayonet adapter. You know, it's just so ridiculous. So anyway, I'm done. I just wanted to point all this stuff out.
All right, Ernie. Thanks a lot. Thanks.
Goodbye.
813-239-9663. I think Ernie was being very kind. I think he's a very much a pro-gun person, but didn't want to argue too much. Let's go to Carlos, who's in Tampa. Hey, Carlos, you're on. What would you like to comment about?
Yes, good morning. I had one original topic. But then I started hearing this other conversation. I wonder if I can have two topics. It will be kind of quick on the first one.
Don't take up too much time, but, you know, give us a good 90 seconds on both.
Okay. Yes, the latest, the conversation you just had, I had to go back to in the 1920s when, you know, there were machine guns around. And at some point, the government said, okay, well, we can't have machine guns anymore because they are killing people. Most of the people that were killing at the time were, you know, gangs killing each other in Chicago and stuff like that. But the government stood, you know, and said, okay, they are too dangerous, so we're going to restrict them. Now, now we are in 2018, right? And so we are, again, have a situation in which we have a weapon that is killing a lot of people. And it should be deemed also too dangerous for the street. I would say an approach may be to, you know, have this, you know, the people that want to own them, you know, it's okay to own them, but in some restricted areas, for instance, you know, if you have a racing car, right, you cannot race on regular streets, but, you know, you can go to a racetrack and have your, you know, your racetrack there. So something like that may be
so restrict
that can be worked out.
Restrict one of these military-style weapons to a gun range, that you can lock it up in a locker at a gun range, but don't bring it home, and you can shoot to your heart's content at the gun range, but it doesn't belong in the streets of the city.
Right, because they're, you know, they're way too dangerous. You know, for I mean, you cannot legislate you know, mental health, whatever, you know. Yeah, we have Trump, you know, he's not exactly, you know, the most, you know, healthy person mentally, and, you know, he's in charge of the military here. So it's kind of hard to, you know, put restrictions on mental health. But guns, you know, they can be treated like, you know, like a driver's license. You know, you can drive your car, you have to register, and there is some kind of registry somewhere. And
they you think there track, should be, you know. Should there be insurance, too, for a gun owner?
Well, it's possible with insurance, but mostly to know who has the guns.
Yeah, so you want registration. You want to know who's got them. And what was your second point?
Oh, my second point was the original point, and this is in reference to the Israel situation. I do travel to South America frequently, and a couple of years ago I spoke with some people there, and they tend to be, well-learned, well-educated, I started listening to them, and they said they kept saying that Israel had a lot of control over United States policies and, you know, what the government does in the United States, and I kind of refused to kind of accept it because, I live here, and it wasn't obvious to me until 2016. In 2016, Congress approved, and then Barack Obama signed $38 billion with a B, dollars of U.S. American taxpayer money to Israel, okay? And this is money that could be used here for, you know, medical advances, I mean, for medical research. We definitely need it here, right? How come, you know, American taxpayer money is going to Israel?
Well, but American taxpayer money goes to a lot of countries. We give a lot of military aid to a lot of countries, including countries that violate other folks' human rights, Israel being one of them, but also Saudi Arabia. We give tens of billions of dollars to Saudi Arabia in the hope, what we give it for, too, I think, is that we hope that they turn around and use that money and buy American military weapons so we have a market for our military goods. It's unfortunate that we give money to human rights abusers. And that, you know, we went through this in the 1980s where we were arming military dictatorships, especially in Central America, and that was wrong. So I wouldn't blame Israel. I would say let's look at the human rights record of the country, and they'll get our aid if they have a good human rights record.
But this guy Netanyahu, right? He's been in his own country. You know, they know he's a crook, right? And meanwhile, he comes here, and everybody kind of, you know, people in Congress worship him. You know, like he's some kind of superstar. And kind of dictates things over here. You know?
Yeah, I'm not sure about
the. If they kick him out of Israel, I'm sure he's going to run for office over here.
I do think he's coming here because he's in trouble over there. Netanyahu is under investigation over there in Israel. Carlos, thanks a lot. Thanks for your.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Good to hear from you. But I'm not sure that he drives U.S. policy. I think there is. there are a lot of governments, foreign governments, that have a lot of influence on U.S. policy, Israel being one, I think Saudi Arabia being another, and I think if we go through the list, there's going to be a lot of governments. And some are pretty good on human rights, and some are not so good on human rights. And that's where I would draw the line, is let's be friendly to those countries that have a good human rights record. Everybody's allowed to vote. Everybody has property rights. People aren't forced to stand in line to move through the country and wait for hours to get to their jobs. David writes this, the Netanyahu and Trump meeting yesterday was chilling. Two presidents under investigation and likely guilty need to change the subject. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And we'll play those comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Now stay tuned for the NPR News and the Midpoint program with your